So am I still waiting?
Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
The team which I like to call the baby faces or the good guys, Russo, Jarrett, Steiner, and Nash.
It's like the 1927 Yankees.
Yeah,
what
but
a lineup.
There are no teams. It's every man for himself after the world title.
Against the heel team, the team of the Cat. Booker T. Goldberg.
Wow, what an eruption there. Look at that structure. 40 feet in the air every bit.
Did he just guarantee
this? Because I've got the jack.
He's got the straw. Ready for war, let my balls hang. I put the clutch in the whole crew like Hulk. I ain't concerned, I bust on bad boy mob deep. I murder a firm. When you scream fake dubs, who the fuck you mean? Get more cream than all of y'all, nigga. Fuck your team.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and the man not on Skype, the man right to my right. Wait, hang.
I'm here.
And we both sound much better than we did last week. I think people were real troopers that got through our shows last week because you and I were not the embodiment of good health last week.
No, we weren't.
We sounded god-awful.
We sounded like death. And what was interesting for me was listening back, you could hear the progression as I continued to lose my voice from
you were normal
to bad.
You were having trouble at the end of Impact. I was having trouble throughout Raw last week. But you know what? I really felt bad that we missed that Impact podcast the week prior, and I felt that we couldn't. We had to Darren Young it. No days off.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
I'm not familiar enough with their catchphrases, but that's good.
Maybe now is a good time, Way, that now that we're more removed from the horrific events of UFC 152, we can go back and shed some light on what we did. I feel a lot of people thought we shortchanged them last week with a mere 43-minute review. So today we're going 4 hours,
yep.
And we're going to recap everything, starting with UFC 152 week. And now that you look back, Way, to me it's a blur of events, all mixing together. All I see are fights, Fight Network balloons and cupcakes, Heineken bottles. That's all I think of from UFC 152.
Moosehead.
I'm thinking Heineken bottles.
Well, okay, yes, that too. Jason Agnew would appreciate that. For me, I don't look at it so much as a blur because I had a schedule every day and we had rundowns every day, so I'm able to pretty much.
It was very well put together. It was just completely taxing. And I think our office felt it because like 8 or 9 people all had to like take some days off from just people getting sick.
Mm-hmm.
Like bodies were destroyed in this. And this sounds like the ultimate media people that cannot cope. But
yeah, our days were pretty much just filled with a lot of TV production. We went live like almost many hours every day covering press conferences, weigh-ins, or just, you know, analysis. And
more analysis. I told John and Robin, I was like, guys, I cannot talk about this main card anymore. Like, I feel that you and I, the three of us, have talked about every potential angle we can on these fights, and we just had to keep doing it all week long.
Yeah.
I was almost, like, sick of this fight card before it even began because I had just spent so much time talking about it. And I hit that like zombie state at one point where I was in this very room with John Jones on this television as I'm interviewing him over the phone for a double ender. And it was like halfway through the interview, it was like I zoned in that it was like, I'm fucking interviewing John Jones right now. And it's like, I'm just on autopilot almost doing all of this stuff because there was just so much to do that I had no time to really overthink anything I was doing. It was simply just one thing to the next. And I wasn't as big a fan of how fast we had to move at that pace. But I like to prepare and stuff more for things. But I think it turned out well.
I think so, too. And I don't think, you know, many viewers would have noticed. The fact that you can do something like that on autopilot, as you say, is I think, a testament to how well you know this stuff. It's cool. And I imagine all this is like... this whole thing that you're experiencing, and or we're all experiencing here at the Fight Network, it's probably something that's unique to our sport, really, because, like, you know, at least in hockey, baseball, even football, you have games, you know, a few times a week, at least a new game a day to talk about. Whereas with the UFC, you are focusing on this one event, this one matchup between two people for a month. In the case of the previous UFC, a month and a half or 2 months.
I always wonder how people like in like other sports, like if you're like an NFL reporter or something like that, it's like, do you think that they watch every game on Sunday? Because there's got to be some, like myself, if I'm covering something in fight, I feel I have to watch everything. Like this past weekend, I watched every fight on Fuel for the UFC. I watched every fight for Bellator. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I feel I have to watch everything. And, probably in reality, I probably don't need to watch every single fight. I think, you know, Philip Nover fighting on Spike.com Friday night at 6:30 p.m. probably didn't have to see that. But nonetheless, I did. And I figure that there's got to be some people that cover the NFL for a living that will watch every game every week.
Perhaps.
That's incredible. Like, I don't think I could do that. I don't think I could.
Yeah, I'd say you come pretty close, though, with the amount of hours you put into not just MMA, but pro wrestling every week.
I was Sunday afternoon. I actually, like, finished a bunch of my stuff, and I turned on my TV, and on my PVR, I had Saturday Morning Slam and NXT, and I was just like, I can't. I just can't. This is my wall. I can't watch everything.
What are your thoughts on that Saturday Morning Slam? I've yet to see it.
I've only watched one episode. Dan Lavransky is a big fan of it. He likes it a lot. It's a half hour, so, I mean, it goes by really quickly. It's like one match and some, like, video features and stuff. It's not in HD, and I've certainly become an HD snob. I really notice it when I watch ROH and for the Saturday Morning Slam, because it's on like a CW affiliate.
I see.
So we can get it in Canada, but I really, it just looks not great.
Because it's not in HD. Have you seen that Bryan Danielson Tyson Kidd match?
It hasn't aired yet. I don't.
Oh, it
believe.
Hasn't. Okay.
Yeah.
I love the idea. For those of you not aware, apparently these two Tyson Kidd and Bryan Danielson did a dark or a Saturday Morning Slam match,
yep.
And they wrestled it very much. Knowing their audience, they wrestled it like in a very family, kid-friendly style, and I think that's genius. That to me gives me incentive to watch a show like this, because these guys are wrestling for their audience, and just the great thing about pro wrestling is that you have so many different styles. You have a Ring of Honor style, you have a, you know, hardcore, whatever, and the fact that these guys, these wrestlers that we see on Raw or SmackDown every week, are allowed to go out there and wrestle a completely different style from what we're used to. That, to me, is an incentive to see them, you know, see them exhibit this skill level and this creativity on a different show.
I'm sure a lot of guys, you know, the experienced ones, probably love that slot on Saturday Morning Slam. It really challenges you as a worker. Change things up. I think that stuff is great. I mean, it's...
You can even extend that. I mean, if they don't have this anymore, but if they, you know, if they had a Shotgun Saturday night or something that aired late at night, you can maybe go more risque. Maybe, you know, do something completely different from what you
Honey Wrestling.
Wrong. Honey Rest.
With men.
Yes. Oh, I'm there. Yeah, hey. Hell in a Cell with honey.
Might not stick.
Honeycomb in a cell.
Honeycomb in a cell.
I don't know.
But yeah, so from what I've seen with Saturday Morning Slam, seems like a fun show. It's not a priority for me to watch every week. NXT, I try and watch when I can, but I miss it more often than I catch it. It's a fun show, too, to watch. It's fun watching guys that are kind of on their way up, and you kind of get a look, like the Ascension, the tag team. They have one of the best entrances in wrestling right now. The way they shoot it, it's great. It's I think you'd really enjoy their entrance if you saw it. William Regal's on commentary. I enjoy him for the most part. It's a good show.
Cool.
Good to see a lot
of stuff. I've seen one episode. I haven't really watched it every single week.
So what are you drinking today, Wei?
I'm drinking a soy latte. It's all I drink anymore.
I went to Starbucks, and I ordered a grande with the blonde roast, and she rung it in, and she's like, you wanted a medium, right? And I was like, yeah. I was like, I've fucking learned your people's weird size descriptions, so you better call it a grande, because I feel stupid when I call it a grande. And she's like, you want a medium, right? And I was like, I guess that's what a grande is. Nonetheless, she was referring to not the size of the cup, but the medium roast. So she gave me the medium roast instead of the blonde roast. God damn it. So well, this is not as good as the blonde roast.
It's certainly confusing. If they should call one thing a grande, you should...
They have multiple names for everything. It's like, this is the medium roast is also called the pike roast.
That's bullshit. It should be the grande.
Let's have some uniform names here.
It should be the grande roast. It's like, you know, you're mixing units.
I want a medium light coffee.
A medium light.
That's what a blonde roast really is. A grande blonde.
I've never understood these stupid coffee terms. Is there any other food that has such a any other drink that has such a complex?
I think the people that don't go to Starbucks is because they think it's too upper class.
Well, I'm sure that's part of the marketing, right? That's why they get you to pay for more. It's because you somehow feel like it's a better coffee.
Sometimes I just like Tim Hortons because I feel it's...
Medium's a medium.
Exactly.
You don't have to deal with a blonde roast. There's only one roast.
Exactly. That's what I want. Water. I went last week, Wei. I had two coffees all week last week when I was sick. All I drank was tea. And really, last week I learned that if I was told it was always my big fear of being told one day you gotta wean off the coffee. No problem, I think, if I had to. Tea is a suitable replacement that does have caffeine in it, but nowhere near the amount of coffee. And I feel I had no withdrawal.
Yeah, tea has no amount of coffee in it. Thank you.
Sorry, caffeine. That's what I meant. Less caffeine in it.
Okay.
Tea has no coffee in it. Now that's going to be put up on the thread.
Yeah.
My new favorite thread. I love that thread.
The John Pollock fact checking thread. I love it too.
So, yeah, that was my conclusion last week. Is that coffee? I won't die without it.
You won't die without it. So you've upgraded somehow to a normal person's body.
I see all these like ridiculous tests online. The study after study
about what?
About coffee being a positive for you.
In moderation.
Live longer. Yes. There was another one I read last week. All these positive things. I don't take any of these as legit, because if I read a study that said coffee will cause cancer, I'd still drink it because I wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, so, just do what you want.
How was your weekend?
It was good.
I want to prolong this chat, Wei, because I feel we haven't talked a lot.
My weekend was fantastic.
We almost intersected on Saturday night.
Almost,
at
yes.
Our old stomping grounds.
Yes, it was in Toronto over the weekend. There was this...
Black night.
No. White night.
Is that what blanche?
Nuit
oh,
blanche.
Yeah, it's not nuit noir.
No, it's not.
It's white night.
It is white night, which is a street festival occurring in the city once a year. And what happens is they close down streets in the downtown core, and they extend, I guess, even drinking hours.
I think it goes to like 4 a.m.
4 a.m. And what happens is throughout the city, there are large art exhibitions.
Installations,
I'm sorry. And, you know, it's not like they put paintings up. These are models or sculptures or I don't know what you call them.
It's all like, it's very hipster stuff. It's like, you know, flashlights going at the beat of like drums. It's out there.
Yeah, you know, it's not, I don't think...
I've had good experiences and I've had bad experiences at Nuit Blanche.
I feel like few people actually go to see the art itself. It's just an excuse to hang out in the middle of the street.
And you can pretty much drink publicly. They're not going to enforce much.
Yeah, with a ton of people walking around at 3 a.m. in the morning. I thought it was awesome.
Walked by a guy peeing.
Cool.
Yeah.
I saw this one guy.
I think it might have been an installation, actually, now that I think of it.
You never know, actually. It's just an excuse for people to do crazy shit. I saw one guy slap a girl in the face really hard. And
this
girl,
part of SMC?
It was not part of SMC. Oh, okay. I was not putting this together. This one guy is just like in the middle of the street slapping this woman, and this woman's like laughing. She's enjoying this. And I walk over, I'm like, hey, what's going on here?
You went up to them?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I thought this woman was getting beat up. And then she's like,
you better have had your helmet ready.
Yes. I was ready. And then she's like, no, it's okay, it's okay. And they proceeded. She was like shoving her.
This was
weird. No, it was not part of anything. These two people, they might have been drunk.
Oh, that's
fucked.
Or
just stupid.
Oh. Yeah, that makes more sense. I on Friday night, I was leaving a bar late. And looked down the street, and there was like it had to have been like 12-person brawl. And this was like a good 200 feet away, and you just see these guys swinging wildly, and everyone on the street is just stopped, and you're just glued to this. And I immediately went in the other direction to leave. I wanted no.
Whoa, you learned.
Oh, yes.
From your previous interactions.
I did learn quite a lot. There were guys right by me who were like, let's go, let's go, and ran towards them. I was like, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's
to run towards a massive brawl that is happening downtown in Toronto.
That's dumb. What, these guys were actually swinging fists?
This was crazy.
Wow.
Even from as far away as I was seeing it, like everyone stopped, and it's so strange. It's like when you see a fight in person like that, you just cannot turn away. But I don't have that same reaction when I'm like watching an MMA fight, even in person. It just feels completely different. When you're watching two trained athletes fight, it just feels so much more civil and a sporting event. Whereas a fight on the street, there's just this, like, I cannot look away.
Yeah, it's not because it's not supposed to happen. You can go to a demolition derby and you know, it can be boring eventually to see a bunch of used cars run into each other. But if you saw a real car accident, that's something different.
I saw a guy die on Friday on live television.
Oh, yeah, you texted me. I was off work on Friday.
You were sick. Thankfully, you took the day off after Thursday.
But then in the middle of the day, I received a text from John. Holy shit, I just saw a man shoot himself on Fox News.
This was crazy. We were at work, and on one of the TVs, someone had Fox News on in our main area at our office, and he quickly called everybody to the TV, and this was on PVR, and he rewound it, and there was this big car chase in Arizona, and the guy got out of the van eventually. I think he had, like, it was an armed robbery, and I don't know if he stole the van or just robbed someone and then made off in a van, whatever. He ended up in a field, got out, police are chasing him, the helicopter's following them, and Fox News is carrying this. He runs into the field, stops, takes a gun out of his pocket, and you see him just put it to his head and face plants into the ground. And they quickly, I believe it was Shepard Smith, and he's just, cut away, get away, get away, get away. And they go to a commercial, and then they came back, and they were apologetic about showing that, saying it shouldn't have aired on TV. This was fucked.
Yeah, how did it air on TV? Do they not have a delay?
Oh, they were explaining that they were the five-second delay, and everyone was, like, watching this. I couldn't really hear the explanation that the guy came back with after, but he was explaining why that aired, and they were trying to cut away in time and did not. But to me, it's like if you're following a car chase like that, you're following on the hopes, not the hopes, but at least with the idea bad stuff could happen here. And that's kind of the risk you take when you follow a car chase. And you know what? The fact that it aired, I wasn't offended that it aired.
Yeah, but you have a responsibility as a broadcaster to protect the masses from certain things.
I feel if you're watching a car chase and it ends in tragedy, you've kind of walked into the door yourself. You've walked into the room.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. When you're searching for something, like if you're on the internet searching for, I want to see a man shoot himself in the head. Yeah, absolutely. You're walking into it. But broadcast there are different rules for broadcasts. Otherwise, we wouldn't have to censor anything, right? When you're broadcasting, you are well, in theory, entering somebody's home. You're not, you know, unless it's pay TV, I guess the rules are a bit more relaxed. But Fox News, somebody could just be having it on in the background as they babysit their kid, and this comes on.
if you're putting your child in front of Fox News, in front of any news, really,
I'm sure
I think you're throwing your baby into that room.
Oh, come on.
Why don't you leave my
strip
club?
I want to get an update on the election, and all of a sudden
my 4-year old is leaning towards the Democrats.
No, I mean people are babysitting their kids in the same room and at the same time they're watching TV.
Well, I don't know. Am I a horrible person because I watched this?
You're not a horrible person.
I knew something bad was going to... I didn't know exactly what was going to happen when they called everyone over, but I knew something crazy was going to happen. I knew it wasn't going to be a positive ending if people aren't drawn to happiness. They're drawn to fucked up stuff, and that was fucked.
That was fucked.
It's all over the internet now, so you can watch at your own discretion, but if you press play, you cannot be offended. Because, spoiler alert, guy died. Yeah.
Brains? Everything.
No, you saw nothing. In terms of a gunshot to the head, it could have been a lot worse. I think I would have been more offended if I had seen something like that. It was just like a bullet and he fell down. It was like playing GoldenEye, really.
The bullet didn't even go through the other side?
No, not that you could see. I mean, the helicopter, it was an aerial shot. So, I mean, you could see enough, but not seeing a bullet go through his head.
So then all those movies have it wrong.
Maybe. You would think that
although the bullets do go through, I would think, usually. Like that
it very well could have been.
Vietnam War photo?
This was not in HD, by the way.
Okay. Anyway.
And then I saw Louis C.K. on Friday night.
Oh, and how was that?
It was great.
Yeah?
It was fantastic.
How did you get your ticket?
A good friend of mine, Josh Scheinman, had an extra ticket and gave it to me. I was very excited.
That's a very nice friend.
Oh yeah.
Were you the only friend that was eligible for this ticket?
I was a finalist.
You're a finalist.
And
okay.
I made it to the show.
Okay. Cool. And tell me about the show. I'm very unfamiliar.
Well, it was part of the Just for Laughs Festival up here in Toronto. Tons and tons of comics here all weekend long. Actually, I think it ended on Friday. But nonetheless,
I had no idea. That was happening.
Yep, Louis C.K. was kind of the big headliner. He was doing 4 shows in 2 nights. They all sold out at the Sony Center down here in Toronto, where we saw The Striking Truth a few years ago.
Yeah, it's a massive. I guess they do like opera and. Like,
yeah, you know, it's almost theater. Too big for stand up. I wasn't the biggest fan of the venue. I like Comedy Bar for stand up. I'm not as big on these giant auditoriums. And I've seen.
You know, when you get that big, you got to sell some tickets.
Even Massey Hall, though, I prefer more as a venue. That's pretty big. That's where Joe Rogan played UFC weekend. But yeah, Louis C.K., he did like an hour 20, I would say. And it's all new material he's doing since his last special came out. Just fantastic. They had Todd Glass open up for him. And this other guy who is, I'm not sure where he's from. He's Canadian. But they did their 10 minutes, and then Louis C.K. went really long. It was really good. One of the best stand-up shows I've seen. Maybe the best.
Ever.
He's really good.
Joey Diaz.
No, Joey Diaz is like in a level unto his own. He was pretty fantastic.
That's cool. All right.
So that was my Friday night.
Yes.
Anything else?
How was your Sunday?
Sunday I did the law.
Yep. What did you do Sunday morning before the law?
What did I do Sunday morning?
What did you do at 10:55 a.m. on Sunday morning?
I would venture to guess I was having a coffee at that time. Oh. Why?
I'm just trying to pick a times that we haven't covered yet.
Oh, you're getting annoyed.
No, I'm not getting annoyed.
What about you? How was your Sunday?
What did I do?
You didn't tell us about your Saturday night. I just completely bulldozed
here. I went to New York. I hung out with my friend Gordon. We watched.
How is Gordon?
Gordon's doing well. I'd say so. Yeah.
How's your whole circle of friends? Are they all in sync with one another?
No. Not 100%.
We haven't talked about that on here, have we?
No, we haven't.
Okay, so let's move on then. Problems at home.
No, they're all individually doing very well.
Well, that's great. I still
see them all individually. But yeah, Gordon and I just, you know, hung out with him. He drank a lot, and we watched the UFC show, and then we headed up to the Nuit Blanche.
It's a pretty good UFC show, I thought.
I thought it was okay show.
You didn't think it was...
I thought it was a good show, yeah.
You didn't watch the prelims, did you?
I did not watch the prelims.
Prelims were pretty strong. And then the main card, you had that Matt Wyman-Paul Sass fight, which was really good.
They're good fights, but Did I care about the outcome? Not necessarily.
Yeah.
To me, you need that to make a good show.
Fair enough. Fair enough. There wasn't a lot at stake, but I thought Dan Hardy, good to see him win in Nottingham. Stefan Struve, I think he's kind of elevated himself in the heavyweight mix now. 4 wins in a row now.
Really?
So that's good
for him. So who would you place ahead of him in line for contention?
Oh, I think there's still a few he would have to get past. I would like to see Struve matched up with the winner of, and this might not work out so much timing-wise, because Roy Nelson and Shane Carwin are not fighting till December. That fight could make sense if they were to, the winner were to fight Struve in like March or April. But that's a long layoff, I guess, for Struve. They'll probably throw him in there with someone else. He wants to fight Verdum.
Hasn't Nelson already fought Struve?
Yeah, they did. You're right. And Nelson knocked him out. I think if Carwin won, I would certainly go that direction. You could do the rematch with Nelson, but they're not big on rematches that no one is really clamoring for.
I just
for.
Remember that fight because it was the fat guy versus the tall guy.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And Nelson just knocked him the fuck out.
Fat guys win.
They do. That's a rule of thumb in the UFC. Mm-hmm. It's actually a really offensive term, rule of thumb, if you look at the genesis of it.
Why is that?
I'm always worried about going out on a limb here.
Yeah, but this could end up in the fact-checking thread.
I'm going to fact-check this right now. But where do you think that comes from?
The rule of thumb. I think that came about because everybody has thumbs. That's a rule. If you're a human, you got to have a thumb. That's the number one rule, and therefore,
okay.
Rule of thumb.
Rule of thumb is a rude reference to an old law permitting men to beat their wives with a stick no thicker than a thumb, right? Wrong! Well, except that it may still be rude to use a phrase that you know will upset people. It may also be rude to assume that people who use the phrase are being rude. Okay, well, this is like a trolling article here. But that is, I had always heard that story. In fact, I heard it, I believe, in my women, power, and politics class back at Ryerson that, yes, a rule of thumb was how thick a ruler could be that a man could beat his wife with. There was an allowable size of a ruler you could beat your wife with.
Are we talking about thickness or width of a ruler?
I think thickness.
That's a pretty thick.
That's pretty ruler. Big. It's pretty big.
Yeah. Sorry.
I just.
Sorry, ladies.
I've always thought of that whenever I hear that term. But then some people are saying that's bullshit. A reference to this connection is found in 1881 in a book by Harriet Robinson. She says there, by the English common law, her husband was her lord and master. It's like Sid. He had the custody of her person and of her minor children. He could punish her with a stick no bigger than his thumb, and she could not complain against him.
That was the law.
Wow.
That was the rule. Wow. So can a woman use this term? She's like the N-word for black people? I don't feel comfortable using this term anymore.
Well, maybe it should be grandfathered out. Rule of thumb. It's so prevalent. People use that all
come
the time.
Come up with a new saying. Well, okay. What thickness do you think is allowable to beat for a weapon to be used on a woman, John? In our modern times.
Wow, what a question. Way. That's pretty disgusting. Obviously, the Review Away podcast never condones
of course
this kind
not.
Of violence.
I was trying to make a joke here.
That's very offensive.
All right, never mind. Let's move on.
September the 4th of 2000. Way.
26 minutes, 50 seconds I got.
My goal was to beat 43 minutes of non-wrestling talk. But September the 4th of 2000, it was the night before you and I were going to start grade 11.
Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for doing that research. I didn't know that.
I believe the Summer Olympics were going on in Australia.
Okay. Oh, they would have ended.
The Sydney Games.
They would have ended by this point.
I think they went into September.
Really?
I think it was weird. This thread has really got me double-checking
everything.
Yeah,
John just like, he's on his toes now with everything he's saying.
I got to be ready. Got to be ready for everything. 2000 Summer Olympics closing ceremony.
Doesn't want this to end up in the fact-checking thread.
Let's see if this is right. I want a John Pollock was right thread. October the 2nd, 2000.
Jesus, wow.
Were the closing ceremonies.
That's interesting.
Or was it?
Maybe that has to do with the weather in Australia compared to everybody
else. It could have. It could have.
Interesting.
There we go. So, So there you go. Games. Someone put that in the John Pollock was right thread.
Yeah.
So anyway, all right, we're going to talk about wrestling. Way, WCW, fan or not a fan in 2000?
Was I a fan? Well, if you recall, I actually started watching the product again thanks to one incident, and that was the infamous finger poke of Doom, which
was a year and a half before this.
It was a year and a half. And so I'm sure I watched it a little bit. By this point, though, I had fallen off. Like, it was too much for me. I think I left at about the time, like, Benoit and Eddie and all those guys left. But WCW carried on. I think I was still really, you know, listening to what was happening, but I had never seen this show before. I had not seen the bulk of Russo's run in WCW.
I'm pretty sure I'm sure I saw
John
this
is still
episode
looking up the Summer Olympics. Yeah, he just wants to double triple check that he's right.
Well,
now.
You always got to get a second source way. That's the rule of journalism. At this point, I'm sure I watched this back in the O'Grady's days in downtown Toronto.
Oh, because you had the two screens at the same time.
Yeah, we'd have
Raw.
Nitro on one, we'd have Raw on the other when it came to be. And if I'm not mistaken, I looked this up actually because. This was, of course, in the heyday of the well, not the heyday, but nonetheless, as I pull up my Monday Night Ratings chart here.
Jesus, wow.
Which I downloaded. This Raw, the same night, did a 4.2, which was down, actually, considerably from what Raw had been doing. Prior weeks had done a 6.2. A 4.9, and then this week was a 4.2. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that there were 2 weeks in a row where one was the Westminster Dog Show, and the next Monday was something else, and Raw started like at 11 and still did those numbers. So Nitro, actually, for this Nightway, did a 3.6.
Because it was unopposed?
It was unopposed.
Okay.
And that was the highest number they would do ever until their death.
Interesting.
And might have been their highest rating of the year.
Well, perhaps I'm sure that went into the planning of this big event.
Yep,
which
I think that's why. They were unopposed, and that's why they built up this big show in Dallas.
Which was, in itself, almost a mini pay-per-view on TV.
Yeah, kind of.
War Games 2000.
Russo's Revenge.
Russo's Revenge.
So they were opting not to put the big stip match on pay-per-view. They put it on television here, which was par for the course for a Vince Russo written show in 2000. And this was Dallas, Texas. And we started off with promoting Russo's Revenge and saying it was the first time it would be on TV. And though we call it War Games, it really wasn't War Games. It was the triple cage, which they had introduced earlier that year at the Slamboree event.
And earlier than that, in Ready to Rumble.
Yes, in the Ready to Rumble gimmick match, which from an aesthetic standpoint...
I really like it.
...was visually
I think it looks
very
great.
Impressive.
Yeah.
And? Execution would be something else. And Vince Russo arrives at the building wearing a New Jersey Devils jersey, and this being 2000 was the year that the New Jersey Devils beat the Dallas Stars in the Stanley Cup Final.
Oh.
Heat at its finest.
Yes, yes.
And I guess Russo, New Jersey, New York, close enough for him. And him and his crew, they show up, and they say that the crew was here at 5 in the morning constructing this cage inside of the arena. And Schiavone calls tonight 5 years in the making since Nitro debuted in September of 1995. So 5 years have been geared around this Nightway.
He was making this while he was employed by the WWF. He already had this in the works.
Russo was planning this way before he even got the book in
what is
WWF.
A, yeah, this is called Russo's Revenge. What's he revenging against?
I guess life, wrestling... Marks, newsletters.
Okay. Why?
I don't know. I have no idea. Russo was very vengeful at this point. He had lots of axes to grind with people. But his actual revenge, I guess, I don't know. This was a very confusing show at points, and we'll go through all of it to try and make sense out of it. But our announcers tonight are Tony Schiavone, Mark Madden, and JB, Jeremy Borash.
Jeremy Borash, TNA's own. At this time... Borash was a backstage interviewer for WCW.
I don't even know if he was doing that. He was kind of like Russo's lackey, and he did WCW Live, their
right.
internet show.
Mm-hmm.
And the explanation here was that Scott Hudson's wife had just gone into labor, and he had to leave Dallas.
it was very surprising to me to see Jeremy Borash in this because he was, as I mentioned, completely shaven. He was bald. He was sporting sunglasses. It was a completely different Jeremy Borash. He looked like the Gangnam Style guy.
He did look like Psy. He explained, and they showed highlights of him getting his head shaved. He lost a ratings bet with Vince Russo.
Oh, really?
That's what they said on the broadcast. I would have loved to have known what the bet was. Russo saying, we're going to do a 3.5 with Raw not facing us. And Borash is like, there's no fucking way we're doing a 3.5 even without competition.
The baby faces.
Our show sucks.
Yeah.
And these two were like, in storyline, were like aligned together.
Huh.
Very strange, but nonetheless, that's why Jeremy Borash's head was shaved bald here.
Okay.
So, it was hard to tell because he had the sunglasses on the entire show, but looked identical to today almost.
Yeah.
Like,
I imagine.
He hasn't really aged in 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, good TV face is Jeremy Borash.
Yeah.
Anyway, Juventud Guerrera and Rey Mysterio took on the Insane Clown Posse to open up the show.
The Dark Carnival.
The Dark Carnival. Who are the champions here? Guerrero and Mysterio?
I believe so, yes.
Conan cuts a... I was so confused for this first, like, 10 minutes. I did not realize my video was 30 seconds out of sync with the audio.
Yeah.
And then had to find a different... this was really confusing because I thought they had cut Conan's mic as he's cutting this promo. And I was like, what's he saying? Is he doing his peeling the potatoes promo and they're censoring it? It's like, no, this is just really out of sync. No. It took me so long to figure this sync issue.
It's kind of hard to tell with the MMA and pro wrestling sometimes when things go out of sync because... and you can get away with it if things are out of sync because you people aren't always talking.
So we saw a double plancha by Juve and Ray to the floor, and Disco and Conan joined the commentary table. So we had five people on commentary for our opening match.
Yeah, why was Disco a part of the Filthy Animals?
He just was. Were you a Disco Inferno fan?
I liked him at parts, yeah. I liked his, sparingly, yeah. Yeah, I was a fan. I didn't really understand, though.
I don't know. Disco just, to me, he was someone that just liked to do stupid shit
He's a comedy character.
For the sake of doing stupid shit. Yeah, but this guy also, like, got into, like, creative meetings, and it was like... This was during WCW's whole, well, it's never been done before kind of philosophy. And it's like, I've always hated that stuff. And I've watched enough stuff that Disco's had his fingerprints on, and I can't say I've been a fan of almost any of it.
Hmm.
Including a banana in pajamas being thrown off the top of a cage on a WWA show in Australia.
That I didn't see.
That is a show we one day must review, which, yes, Pollock has on VHS.
You mean like the kids' show?
Yeah, they were involved in the promotion of this. So they had a worker dress up as a banana in pajamas, climb the cage, and they tossed him off the cage, and he bounced off the floor.
Oh, that's amazing.
They were able to trivialize Mick Foley's bump in one spot on a WWA show, and I blame Disco Inferno for probably coming up with the idea.
Did somebody slip
I don't even know this.
Did somebody slip on the banana?
Oh, that company did.
Yeah.
Anyway, the match continues here. Violent J accidentally hits Shaggy 2-Dope when Hoovy ducks. Mysterio hits a springboard leg drop to Violent J, and then the Bronco Buster by Ray.
I'm amazed at the caliber of opponents these guys always get, ICP. They're always in there with either Ray or, I don't know, Psychosis, whoever.
Violent J went for a military press, but then Hoovy hit a springboard drop kick and Ray fell on top. Then Ray hit a leg drop to Violent J as Hoovy held the legs up and Ray hit a top rope, a leg drop for the win. 3 minutes and 40 seconds. And then Conan, in reference to Tigress, who is the valet in the corner of the Filthy Animals, Conan says, "We didn't see the face full of stuff, but maybe back at the hotel we will." So I guess Tigress was like their rat.
Yeah, sure. Listen.
He literally said, "We didn't see her vagina. Maybe we'll see it later." Because that's what the face full of stuff was. She would do the Bronco Buster,
right,
and the announcers would yell, "Face full of stuff, face full of stuff."
I know. And I shudder to think what your female studies professor would say, having watched some of this show. Any wrestling, really, at any point. It's never, I don't know. It's never been very kind.
No.
To women.
With that said, sorry, your thoughts.
No, I was just going to say this was not much of a match. It was all Ray and Hoovy, and then ICP, Violent J, does a gorilla press onto Rey Mysterio. So,
well, the empowered gender class continues here as Pamela Paulshock is with Lance Storm, Elix Skipper, and Major Guns, who they have captured. They've captured her way.
Yep.
So
she's a prisoner of war.
Yes, and they are making her run on the treadmill. And these were like a series of vignettes based around Major Guns' boobs shaking.
Yep.
And being in little to no clothing.
Mm-hmm.
So this was their work for the night. Then Ernest Miller, by the way, Pamela Paulshock, God, did this woman come across as just, I didn't appreciate just how bad she was back in 2000. Mm. This woman looked clueless.
Yeah. Well, she was just another, my whole thing about these segments were that if your point, the point of the segment is to put emphasis on the blonde with the big fake boobs, why would you put your interviewer there, who's also another blonde with big fake boobs? It's like, you know, it's like the philosophy behind doing like an Andre the Giant interview. You would never put a tall guy with Andre the Giant. You would, in fact, put a shorter guy next to Andre the Giant. And this is the same thing. Why are you putting a hot chick with another hot chick?
There's always the positive of having, you know, your hot chick. But it was like you look at, you know, when Sable was like at her peak, it was Sable. It's not like they had other women, but Sable was the focal point.
Yeah.
And here at this point, they had multiple women.
Just stopped,
and it kind of canceled them all out.
Exactly.
So anyway, we go to Ernest Miller, who is with his, I don't know what her title was, Ms. Jones. Yeah. A manager, a consultant.
I had no idea.
A woman. She's in a neck brace after Jeff Jarrett hit her with a guitar on Thunder the prior week. And they are with Booker T getting into a limo as the cage starts to lower as they go to break. What's going on?
What's going on? The cage is coming down right now.
Don't tune out. So Vince Russo comes out with the Natural Born Thrillers. You remember them?
Yes, I do.
This is a group that I think had they come along in like either like 3 years earlier in WCW or signed WWE developmental deals, I think all of them would have had much more promising careers. And here we are 12 years later, and Mike Sanders was a great talker, completely out of the business, got into like stand-up. Sean O'Hare, who flaked out in WWE, has had multiple battery charges, some against women, and was a failed K-1 kickboxer. Mark Jindrak, who I would say has been the most successful of the Thrillers down in Mexico.
Okay.
Chuck Palumbo, who now runs a motorcycle store and is in a band. Seems to be happy with his post-wrestling life.
Yeah, he went to Billy and Chuck. That was a big success.
Reno. No idea what happened to Reno. And Sean Stasiak, who last I heard was trying to start off...
He made a documentary about himself.
Then was trying to get into like sports therapy.
Okay.
Boy, depressing.
Would it have been that different had they been in the WWF?
I just think there was a lot of talent here. I was like, these guys were all fairly green at this point, but I enjoyed the Natural Born Thrillers at this point. This was like the first time WCW was actually investing in some younger talent.
Here's what would have happened if they were signed by the Fed. They would have probably been a part of something like the new Nexus, and then they would have just drowned in FCW, and that would have been it.
I'm talking back here, circa 2000.
Sean O'Hare was in these guys were in the WWF,
they all came in with like that WCW taint, and I think a lot of guys couldn't overcome that.
Yeah, but you know, you look at
Chuck Palumbo was someone I thought Sean O'Hare and Chuck Palumbo were going to be like I thought they were really going to get somewhere in their career.
Yeah.
And I think if WCW had stuck around, I think those two would have eventually made their way up. I was really high on especially those two. Those two were the standouts, and Sanders was a really good talker.
Well, and say what you will about the, you know, Russo's era, but I thought this group was a good group. Was
Russo
a good idea.
Always put a lot of emphasis on younger talent. That's something you can never take away from Russo. He always cared about the mid-card and moving guys up, and that's something I will never criticize Russo for. The mid-card was always really important during the Attitude Era. Guys were over. I think it was the most over the mid-card has been in the last 20 years was when Russo had a huge part in the mid-card. And moving over to WCW, he was the one that really pushed for like the Booker T's, for the Natural Born Thrillers, and especially during this time when a lot of the big talent was going home, mm-hmm. he was trying to make new guys. Unfortunately, he had some horrible ideas, and a lot of those guys never really went anywhere. But you can't fault the guy's, at least, motives, which I do believe were to create new stars. So that is one point in Russo's favor. So mm-hmm. to people that think I'm jaded, fuck off. Anyway, the Natural Born Thrillers come out here with Russo. And Russo promises that WCW will entertain them tonight, unlike the Dallas Cowboys yesterday. So here he is wearing a New Jersey Devils jersey insulting the football team. Is there something below cheap heat? Because that's what this was. This was like rain check heat.
Mm-hmm. What? Rain check?
If you were to go buy something for cheap, it's not even there. You can't even get it. It's so cheap.
Okay. Oh, okay. A new term coined by you. Rain check heat. Yeah, no, I don't know if you could. He could have perhaps insulted ugly fans, maybe. I don't know.
He made a Troy Aikman concussion joke.
Oh, yeah. That got some actual boos. Yep. I didn't realize that was what was happening.
This was when concussions were funny.
Yeah.
They explain the rules for the main event, where you have to grab the title on top of the three cages, then come down and walk out the door. And first of all, what are your thoughts on the rules of this match? Because I was not a fan of the you have to complete this monumental task of climbing three cages to grab a title, but then you could literally slip on the floor, which is the storyline they told, and a guy just standing there could grab the title and walk out.
Right. It's I don't think it's a terrible idea. It's like football, you know? It's you can, it's like capture the flag. You gotta go from one end to the other, and you gotta complete
it. It is exactly like capture the flag.
But although in capture the flag, the person stealing from you at the end would have to go all the way back to the other way. This one, it does kind of defeat the purpose of the whole climb. They should make it so that
why would anyone go through that risk of climbing?
And then that was
just
Kevin.
Figure someone else has to be able to do this.
Kevin Nash's strategy.
The heel was the smartest one of the nine.
Yeah.
So then he explains that there will be two teams for tonight's singles match for the title.
That was the other thing that was odd about this. And calling this a War Games match, it really is not a War Games match whatsoever.
Yeah, Dusty Rhodes was just disgusted at this.
It's a singles match. Everybody was fighting for themselves. Whoever walks out at the end with the title becomes champion.
So he said, first of all, we have the team of the babyfaces. That's what he called them, the babyfaces. Kevin Nash, Vince Russo, Jeff Jarrett, and Scott Steiner taking on the heels. Booker T, Ernest Miller, Bill Goldberg, and Sting.
Nobody's done this before. We're referring to each other using industry terms.
The babyfaces and the heels. And to be cute, we have flipped them.
Yeah.
Could this be more confusing? Not to mention there's no team concept around this match. Only one person can win this match, and we have teams.
Yeah, that part is a little odd. But it wasn't confusing. It's confusing if you're a fan who has not been on the internet and is just watching this. What the fuck? A heel?
He says that Ernest Miller's deal with Eric Bischoff has an injunction, and Ernest Miller, who I guess was like the general manager role at this time, has no power tonight, and he is putting all of the heels in qualifying matches, sorry, when I say all of the heels, all of the people of the heels team, which are the babyfaces, are going to be in qualifying matches.
Meaning the babyfaces.
Exactly.
Sting, Goldberg.
Yes, they all have to win matches tonight to qualify for the cage match. And if Goldberg wins his qualifying match tonight, he will waive the non-physicality clause between Russo and Goldberg for one night and guarantees he will leave champion tonight. Now, why Russo would be so charitable here?
Because he didn't think Goldberg would win the qualifying match.
For a guy that's his gimmick was he's lost very few matches in his career, I don't know if I would make that assumption. I would just say, you have to win this match, and if you do, you are still not allowed to touch me. That's what I would have
done.
He
had a lot of faith in
Shane
Douglas.
He was booking him in a singles match with Shane Douglas and thought the franchise, he's got his number tonight. Yeah, yeah. He's got Goldberg's number. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, I will say, the way they crafted this, they tried to explain everything that happened in the main event, and a lot happened in the main event. I think this was one of Russo's better nights of at least trying to make everything logical, mm-hmm. which is more than I can say for a lot of what he did in TNA. This was, I always look at Russo's run in WCW as just a mess. Mm-hmm. But watching this self-contained two-hour show, it to me told me that this guy actually sat down and asked questions that any viewer would have asked about how can all this make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. As a standalone show, I thought this show worked. And somebody like me, for instance, who was not familiar with any of the product going into this show, you could sit down and there's a logical build with all these qualifying matches building up your main event. I thought that was fun.
Kevin Nash comes out. I had no idea. He was the WCW champion at this point.
You would have no idea that he was aligned with the babyfaces or the heels either.
No, considering the
reaction that he got coming out, cheered like a huge star.
This was coming off of the New Blood Rising pay-per-view where Booker T had beaten Jeff Jarrett to keep the title. And then somehow in these 3 weeks, Nash had won the title somewhere in there. And again, I pride myself on my memory. I have no recollection of when Nash won this title or that they did a title switch. Like, this thing was literally hot potato in 2000. Go look back at the WCW title changes in 2000. It is insane. Anyway, so Nash is our champion, comes out. He's upset over his title being on the line tonight. Says he only has to defend his title once a month. Russo argues with him. Nash goes to grab him when Sting appears in the ring with a bunch of lightning. And then Nash gives Russo the finger, leaves, and Russo is chased up to the top of the cage by Sting until Steiner and Jarrett climb up, along with the Natural Born Thrillers. Then Booker T and Ernest Miller fight in the ring, and Russo escapes, goes up the ramp as Goldberg comes out, and Russo runs off. So this was all pretty much a tease, setting the table for the main event later on in the show.
Yeah, a decent segment to promote the storylines heading into the main event, I thought.
After the break, Steiner and Jarrett are upset with Russo in the back for pissing off Kevin Nash. And this is when we got the highlights of Borash getting his head shaved over his ratings bet with Vince Russo from WCW Live. I really want to know what this ratings bet was.
Yeah, me too.
The Harris brothers, they want a home video played, and it shows them outside on a bike. They go into a bar where Chronic is just hanging out. And they attack Chronic and smash a pitcher on their head. A pitcher of beer, not a baseball player.
This is their former DOA leader. Brian Adams.
Oh, my God, you're right. The DOA imploding here on WCW television.
That's right.
Then Shane Douglas, who is with his valet, Torrey Wilson, wants a match with Goldberg in Russo's office and along with the help of the Natural Born Thrillers. But Torrey speaks up and says, no, we don't want the Thrillers' help because they're screw-ups. And Douglas says, yeah, I just want a singles match with Goldberg. I am so not confident in these idiots that I would rather fight Goldberg one-on-one than seven-on-one.
Well, he wanted, I don't know what the whole thing with Torrey was at this point.
She was a terrible speaker at this point.
She was bad. Like, babyface Tori, fine. She can come out here, look, you know, look good and, you know, get a good reaction. But heel Tori, nah.
Not working. Work. Not working. Okay, so we go to our next qualifying match. It's Sting against Vampiro and the Great Muta.
The Great Muta.
Yeah.
Keiji Muto, the pro wrestling legend, just 1 year away from having his match of the year with Junichiro Tenryu.
That is right. And
here, what's he doing?
This was not exactly the Sting Muta classics of 1989 here, Wei. No Gary Hart either. Vampiro is acknowledged as the JCW champion. Is this the is this the most lopsided working agreement we've ever seen with WCW, even at this stage of the game, and Juggalo Championship Wrestling being acknowledged on WCW television? Like, the fucking ICP have to be the most persuasive negotiators ever in wrestling history to get acknowledgement on WCW television in 2000.
Yeah.
Bravo. Bravo.
Yeah, good for them. Jesus.
Wow.
They made a killing off of... all, everything that they've done. Jesus, wow. Juggalo Championship Wrestling Champion.
Vampiro. Vampiro's clothesline to the floor, and then a faceplant is delivered to Muta by Sting. Muta then misses Sting with the mist, which is sent into Vampiro's eyes, and Sting splashes Vampiro in the corner, hits the Scorpion Death Drop. 1 minute and 11 seconds, Sting qualifies for the War Games main event, and Vampiro and Muta then argue afterwards, and ICP runs in to stop them, probably saying, guys, let's not fuck this up. This is great.
Yeah.
Muta would quickly return back to New Japan after this very failed talent exchange here with WCW, where Muta came in and was basically paired with Vampiro.
An insane clown posse. Sick. Do you need to say any more?
Amazing. Just amazing. Russo was between his booking of Liger and Muta, some of his best international booking.
I don't remember him booking Liger.
Liger was part of an exchange right when Russo and Ferrara came in late 99.
Yeah.
And it's like they had no idea what to do with Liger.
Oh,
so
man.
They just threw him out there. Pamela Paul Shock is back with Storm, Skipper, and Major Guns, this time in an exercise room as she sweats.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. This was like torture they were putting her through.
Elix Skipper says they are training her mental altitude.
Her mental altitude.
Yeah. I think he meant aptitude.
Great. Stevie Ray is upset with Vince Russo that he is booked and has to wrestle tonight because if he doesn't, he will lose his gig on Thunder.
Right.
His memorable color commentary run on Thunder.
Yeah.
Suckers guts to know.
Uh-huh.
There is a perverse side of me that wants to hear Booker T and Stevie Ray call an event together.
Oh, that'd be great.
Oh, my goodness.
Shucky, ducky, quack, quack. I'm sure they do it for their own promo. Oh, wait, no, but they're not on speaking terms.
Not
here.
That I know of.
Okay.
Not since the last time I heard from Stevie.
That's too bad.
Jared and Steiner are with Nash in the back. Nash is upset at Russo, and he says, tonight, maybe I'm going to play for the other team.
Ooh.
Big Sexy is going to play for the other team.
There's a reason he's growing out that long hair.
Oh, yeah.
Nice and shiny.
Magic Mike, he was getting ready for here.
What?
Playing for the other team.
Is that what that movie's about?
Male strippers.
Why is that playing for the other team?
I would assume that there's a lot of crossover.
Oh, yeah? I don't know. I don't know nothing about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
That takes us to our probably the second greatest brother versus brother match. Next to Brett and Owen.
Well, here's the thing. Like, have these guys ever wrestled on TV prior to this?
I don't think so.
Or even on
I don't remember it, so if they did, it wasn't impactful.
I mean, okay, the match here is Stevie Ray versus Booker T, and I feel like, come on, this is a money match.
They got 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Of which Stevie comes out, repeats the exact same promo we just saw in the back about how he has to fight. Tonight, they are not going to fight for Russo. They are fighting for the fans in Dallas. As Shivani plugs the beginning of their sixth year of Nitro. And final year.
Yeah. Not even a whole year. Are you kidding me? There's like 3 months left. 4 months left. In.
It wasn't a long run.
Happy.
So Booker comes out and says, don't hate the player, hate the game. Which is his big catchphrase here in 2000.
Which they dropped when he went to the WWE.
Well, yeah, because that would be heat with Hunter.
Oh.
Yeah. So Booker's out, match begins, and they say, this is Russo's manipulation at its best. And they fight on the floor, come back in, Booker hits an axe kick, spin-a-rooney, and goes for a side kick. Ray catches him, drops him, Booker hits a back body drop, and then Stevie blocks the bookend. Booker just goes for it again, hits it, 2 minutes and 3 seconds. This was brother versus brother for the first time ever in Dallas, where they first got their break with Global.
And we could be wrong about the first time ever.
Well, if they had it one prior, it's not like it was something anyone remembered.
Right.
So this was just a throwaway TV match. Booker yells at Stevie because at the beginning of the match, Stevie attacked him from behind.
Mm-hmm.
And Stevie said, I'm just teaching you to keep your guard up. Good luck at War Games. Yeah. And Booker hugs him.
And they hug.
What a nothing match.
Hey, but to be fair, like what Stevie Ray's in-ring career was pretty much done by this point anyway. He was a commentator on
Thunder.
Sorry, how could I forget?
Yeah. Chronic arrives. Oh, this segment.
Great segment.
This was the way nodding his head in disgust.
I want to know your...
This was offensive. This was offensive at its core.
I would like to know your reaction, John.
Well, Chronic arrived, and they approached the Young Dragons, Kaz Hayashi, Jimmy Yang, and Jamie San, later to become Jamie Noble, and asks, where are the Harris brothers? And Kaz Hayashi, what did he say here, Wei?
What did he say here?
Harris brother? Was that what he said?
Before he said that.
I missed it.
He basically just, like, shrieked and tried to play it off as an Asian language. You know, like a Bruce Lee yell? He just, like, that was his response to this question being asked by this person. And it was as if he was speaking the language.
Yep.
Did you catch that?
I was just mystified by just blatant racism here, but it's wrestling, right? So who cares?
It's wrestling.
I'm watching this, and my God, the guy is still like quality today, but especially in 2000. I mean, Kaz Hayashi was one of the best junior heavyweights like in the entire industry at this point, and he comes over to Japan and is in this.
Comes over from Japan.
Yeah, from Japan. He had been in WCW like 2 years by this point. He came in like 98. And he's put in this role. And I always hear people talk about, you know, oh, all you guys that just care about good matches. It's like, in America, you've got to be a character. And Kaz Hayashi was, for instance here, you could make lots of examples. He's like, he was becoming a character here. Did this do anything for Kaz Hayashi's career? Doing this stuff? The only way you remember the Young Dragons is if you remember the in-ring stuff they had with, like, Three Count, for instance. And there was always this belief that it's like you give them these stupid characters and it's actually growing them as characters. To me, it was just...
not this. I don't know how anybody could argue this segment did anything for them. This was a complete
barrier. I look at this. I look at, like, Jimmy Yang as the redneck, and it's like, yeah, these things are funny for a week or two. And to me, it just cast them as, like... afterthoughts.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, they're joke characters.
And I was a giant Young Dragons fan at this time. In 2000, WCW, there was little to look forward to every week. And the Young Dragons and Three Count, I loved any combination of those.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. So, after the Young Dragons had the audacity to not speak English, Chronic just attacked them and put them through tables.
Yeah.
Put Jamie-san, they chokeslammed them through a table.
Because they're small.
And they're Asian.
Yeah.
Well, most of them are Asian.
Mm-hmm.
Three counts in the ring afterwards, but they get interrupted by the Chronic intro. And they come out. The Chronic chokeslams all three members of Three Count, which, as you will recall, were Evan Courageous, Shannon Moore, and Shane Helms.
Again, because they're small.
Yes. And they gave them, it was a triple high times. And that was what Tony Schiavone referred to it as. We saw a full Nelson slam by Adams to Courageous, a pump handle slam to Shannon. And then Brian Adams gets on the mic and calls out the Harris brothers. And Schiavone, swear to God, says, everyone in the world wants to see Chronic against the Harris brothers.
Ugh.
Not good.
Not me.
Before they can come out, Jeff Jarrett comes out and calls them, I don't know, he used the word marijuana and they censored it here. And they book a handicap match with Chronic against Ernest Miller. So this is Ernest Miller's qualifying match way. He would have to beat Chronic to get into War Games. So Miller says to Chronic that they're all fighting the same people and says instead they should beat up Jeff Jarrett, who was at commentary at this point. And as Adams and Clark turn to Jarrett, Miller tries to roll up Adams, only gets a two count. Miller then slides to the floor, attacks Jarrett, and then Miss Jones slaps Jeff Jarrett until Jarrett chases after Jones with a guitar. This distracts Miller. He takes the high times. Chronic gets the win at a minute 15, and they announce now that Chronic is part of the main event.
Yeah.
This made no sense on any level. Miller is now out, and two guys are now in.
Yeah.
What was even better here is that they cut to the back, and I'm pretty sure this was live because they cut there too early, and then Russo celebrates with Steiner that Chronic has won. Steiner yells at him, and then Russo sells that he's all upset now. I had no idea what was going on here. I had no idea if Russo was happy that Miller was out or upset that Chronic was now in the match, and why was this even booked?
Right. Well,
this was the most confusing thing on the show for me.
I'm pretty sure they're trying to sell that they didn't. Russo. They're trying to sell that this was an oversight by Russo and that he inadvertently put these two much bigger threats than Ernest the Cat Miller into his match.
Shane Douglas and Torrey Wilson then come out, and this is when Wilson gets to cut a promo on Dallas and what a hellhole it is.
What you Dallas asses can do is sit down and pay attention while a real woman talks.
I just love to hear
you
her scream.
You guys make me sick. Just shut up. You can't even appreciate a real champion when he's standing right in front of you. So franchise, get this over with quick, because I want to get out of this stupid hellhole.
Yeah, it was a pretty awful promo.
Yes. Douglas then calls out Goldberg. Goldberg does his backstage entrance, comes in. My God, was Bill Goldberg, I mean, he was by far the number one star, and I don't think there was even a number two at this point in WCW. This guy was so far and above everyone else on this roster in terms of a star.
Even in 2000.
Yep.
Past the peak.
Yep. Goldberg goes to the floor. Irish whips Douglas into the guardrail. Douglas briefly got the heat as he kicked him in the gut back in the ring, but Goldberg overpowered him with one arm. Sets him up for the spear, and the Natural Born Thrillers all run in. Goldberg fights off all six of them, hits Reno with his own finish, and Schiavone goes nuts. He rolled the dice on Reno! He rolled the dice on Reno! And then military press slams Mike Sanders. He holds him up above, drops him, and then spears Douglas. That looked really good.
At the same time.
It looked really good. Yeah. For a guy that gets a rep for not being coordinated, he was very fucking coordinated here.
I thought so, too. And, you know, it's interesting to watch a Goldberg match now and compare that to guys like Crimson and a Ryback who have received similar pushes. And, you know, we try to think, like, why did it work so well at this point? And I still go back to the physicality of this guy, Bill Goldberg. I mean, his stuff looked really good, very likely because it was probably, it felt very real too. But his timing was very good too, especially in a match like this.
Yep.
He played those spots like perfectly. It was great.
And then he hit the jackhammer to Shane Douglas. All of this did not constitute a DQ and pinned Shane Douglas at 4.5 minutes. So, Shane not going to the main event, and Bill Goldberg is, and he will be allowed to physically touch Vince Russo.
Oh,
the waiver is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Russo is freaking out in the back and asking, "How do I get myself into these things?"
Yeah, Nash is teasing some type of babyface turn against Russo because Russo wants the title. So he's going to be a babyface champion who only defends once a month.
WCW was involved with, they were giving away a car on WCW.com.
Were they?
The Way of the Gun sweepstakes. New movie coming out. Russo walks into Nash in the back, apologizes to him, and asks What do you want, Kev? Do you want money? Nash says, I want my strap. And for Russo not to be able to walk out tonight.
It sounds so wrong on so many levels.
Major Guns, next segment, is swimming in a pool. She somehow was able to change into a bikini here and was just swimming laps in a pool with Lance and Elix Skipper watching her swim. And then we cut over to the Misfits in action spying on them with binoculars. And they run in. And
it's
first,
a pool party.
Yes, Pamela Paulshock is tossed into the pool. Then MIA jumps at Team Canada. Everyone ends up in the pool. And I remember Lance talking about this. There was some, I can't remember what it was, but someone just didn't think ahead of time. And Lance, I think, as the story goes, had to bring up the fact that they can only do this in one take. And the guy didn't understand. And he was like, once we're all in the pool, we can't redo this. And I can't remember the exact story, but it was some goofy story involving this segment.
It turned out fine.
Everyone ends up in the pool.
Yeah, it turned out fine.
Easy night of work if you're Lance Storm. Show up, do three vignettes, and fly home.
It turned out fine for what it was supposed to be, and it wasn't much. This is stupid.
Russo is with the Natural Born Thrillers, saying they have failed over and over tonight. You have one last task. You are going to face Big Vito in a gauntlet match. Don't fuck up. Those are his instructions, basically. Then we had the creepiest segment of the night involving Pamela Paulshock, still wet, with Arn Anderson. And if you think the fact that she was wet was not lost on the writing of this segment, you are underestimating the great Vince Russo.
Yeah.
This was gross.
She needs to be wet. She needs to be wet. And, they probably doused.
Even though the graphic said earlier in the day.
Yeah. They probably doused her with something, with a bucket.
She looked like China here after a scene.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, so, God. Out of nowhere, next week, Way, there will be a wedding in Charlotte with Stacy Keibler and David Flair. And Pamela asks Arn, will we see Ric Flair next week? And Arn says that, I noticed that you are soaking wet, Pamela, and that is outstanding. This was so gross and so creepy. And calls David Flair's godson and says, I'm going to call up Rick. I'm going to pick him up. And he'll be here next week. And Ric Flair had not been on TV since June of that past year when Russo had shaved his head. And this was Flair's big comeback, would be the next week on Nitro. A show that we are not going to review next week.
Yeah, I don't think
We're not coming back next week for the wedding. Big Vito comes out, brags about giving Vince Russo a concussion, and calls him something that is censored here and has the biggest grapefruits in WCW. So the Thrillers come out, and Sanders is mocking Vito, saying that Russo made him. And Vito responds with a yo mama joke, and then tells a gay sex joke. Very cutting edge. There was something about Pavarotti in this. Vito admits he's fat. And Sanders says, well, you're now going to face us. What? That's what happened here. He's like, you're right. I'm not in good shape.
It just sounds so funny out of context. He says he's... They make fun of him for not being an Adonis like all the Natural Born Thrillers. And Vito's like, yeah, I'm chubby, but I can kick your ass. That's all. That's what he says. There's a point to him. He's not just saying, I'm fat, guys.
So Sanders says it's going to be 5-on-1. Shivani points out there's 6 of them.
I thought Vito was a good promo. I thought he was fun.
He was okay.
He had to play a stereotype. But I thought he did it well, and his comebacks were good. He sounded comfortable. It's too bad not much happened with him afterwards.
So we had Big Vito here. What are you talking about? He wore a dress on SmackDown.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? He had to wear it to all the airports and travel with it.
Right.
Toughest man to wear a dress.
How could I forget that?
What a gimmick.
Oh, Jesus.
All right, so we had Vito here against Mike Sanders, Reno, Stasiak, Palumbo, O'Hare, and Jindrak. They stomped down and beat Vito, just took turns beating on him. Vito starts his comeback, but gets beaten down again. And then all the heels just went through moves here. Palumbo with a flying shoulder block.
Reno and Palumbo at one point attempt perhaps the worst-looking 3D I've ever seen. They just fell, and Palumbo jumped, and it just all crumbled into a pile of shit.
So we saw a quebrada, then by Jindrak, the Shauntaun bomb by Sean O'Hare, mm-hmm. and then Sanders climbs on top for the win at 217, and then they beat him with a stickball bat.
A stick ball bat?
That's what they called it.
It was just a stick.
No, they explained he came from his part from Staten Island. They used to play stickball.
I see.
In the street, and he carried this stickball bat around.
Okay.
Anyway, Chronic.
All right.
I don't know here. Chronic what? Is with Sting and Booker in the locker room. Then they show Russo getting ready, and then Paul Shock is with the babyfaces, the heels, Booker, Adams, Clark, Miller, and Sting. Booker's...
No, Miller wasn't there.
Oh, that's right. He was out. This was on Booker. His contribution was saying booyah. Adams then pointed out the logic of this, that you got rid of Ernest Miller, but you've now added us, you idiot. And Sting says that...
So they actually made it an advantage for the baby faces.
Which baby faces? The baby face baby faces or the baby face heels?
No, I'm confused.
So am I. There was no Goldberg here in the back. And Madden says that Pamela Paulshock looks good wet. Just to beat a dead horse.
Mark Madden was just so annoying on this show with his jokes.
It was a lot to take all these one-liners and inside references.
He just, like, he had to get his shit in. He had to get his jokes in. They weren't very funny. And it just seemed like his focus was on getting himself the attention.
Yep. And that takes us to our main event, Russo's Revenge. And two men would start, and then, I don't know, what was it, every minute a new person came in?
Two minute intervals. So that was the only similar thing about War Games.
That was it. That was the only
2 minute intervals in the cage.
So Jeff Jarrett and Sting start off. They used a ladder in the ring. Steiner was out next wearing a new face mask after I think he got his nose shattered by Goldberg. And they double team Sting with the ladder. Chronic then comes out.
There's no coin toss here to determine who gets the advantage.
I think it was just at random. The guys were coming out. There was really no teams.
No, it was not at random. They came out babyface heel, babyface heel.
No, it wasn't? Okay.
Yeah, so how it started off was the heels obviously had the advantage. And so you had a 2-on-1 with Steiner and Jarrett against Sting. And then Chronic comes out, and it's both guys. So not only did the babyfaces even it up, now the babyfaces actually have the advantage, which is perhaps a first in a War Games, with the babyfaces having a main advantage.
I guess, but it was like, what was the point of all this team shit? It's like, you're not working for a pinfall or anything.
Well, it was to sell the War Games name.
It was like they were trying to promote War Games without doing War Games, like in any conceivable fashion.
But you know, having the baby fists there just kind of kills the drama of this match. But, yeah, you argue, well, how much drama was there to begin with?
After Chronic, Russo comes out, like, midway here. You would think he'd be the last guy in his helmet and jersey, New Jersey Devils jersey. And he's accompanied by the Harris brothers, who just became a part of the match here.
They just ran into the cage?
Yeah, why not? And they start fighting Chronic, the feud no one was clamoring for. Sting immediately hit a splash and applied the Scorpion Deathlock to Russo, who would not tap. Next out, Kevin Nash chokeslams Sting, then he grabs Russo by the throat, but Jarrett and Steiner talk him out of it.
Nash had adopted the chokeslam at this point as his big move.
I guess.
It was awkward to see Kevin Nash do chokeslams.
You know what else was awkward? We suddenly just cut to the Harris brothers and Chronic fighting in the crowd during a cage match. Fuck. Booker T is out next, delivered a bunch of axe kicks to Jarrett and Steiner, but then got cut off by Nash. Final entrant was Bill Goldberg, who takes a bat shot from Russo to sell. And then Booker is climbing to the top as Nash simply stands in front of the door, waiting for whoever gets the title.
That was a strategy.
A smart one.
Yeah.
Booker climbs to the top level, gets the title, knocks Jarrett and Steiner in the face with the title on his way down. But then we see that Sting has been handcuffed on the second level and cannot escape. Jarrett hits a guitar shot to Booker, and the belt is dropped to the first level. Russo grabs the title, but then Ernest Miller just runs in here. The cage stip was just dead at this point of keeping people in or out. There was both of examples of this. And head kicks Russo. Nash then power bombs Miller. And Goldberg breaks out of the handcuffs and takes everyone down.
That was awesome.
Crowd was really into this.
Yeah, they had Goldberg handcuffed, and the guy just at the right time just pulled his hand out, broke the chain. That was a really nicely booked spot. I really like that.
And this was when crowd going crazy here, and they tease Bill Goldberg leaving as the champion. But as he gets to the door is shut on Goldberg's head. in the same city of the famous cage door being shut onto the head of Kerry Von Erich by Michael Hayes in World Class in Dallas.
Oh, there we go.
Bret Hart, who looked anything but Bret Hart with his baseball cap here, slammed the door on Goldberg.
He pretty much looked like Bret Hart. He looked like Bret Hart from Calgary, Alberta on a Sunday afternoon.
I guess so. I don't know. He had like his hair like tucked into his hat.
I think that was the point. He didn't want to be seen. He
well,
didn't want to be
I don't
noticed.
Know what they had. This was like a month before they released Bret Hart, so I guess they had no idea of what to do with Bret while he was out with his concussion.
Were
so.
They not officially the NWO Silver and Black at this point?
That was long gone by this point.
But it was the same group of guys.
It was, but they had not gone by NWO for a long, long time. Yeah. So Bret Hart shuts the door. Russo and Nash are on the floor, and what happens? They hug. They hugged it out.
What was the point of that? Like, okay, I know, I mean, what was the point of the strategy for them to tease dissension between Nash and Russo?
Well, I think Schiavone summed it up perfectly here. His exact call was, it was another Russo swerve.
But why? What was the swerve?
Maybe
there?
To give false confidence to the babyfaces that Nash would help them. Why he would think Nash, would help
yeah.
is beyond me. It was just a flawed, logical match to put together. It was like team versus team with an individual title on the line in which only one individual can win it. It's not even like if they had explained that if Nash's team wins, then his teammates all get a title shot within the next year. Like there was no... There was nothing in it here for people to help someone else.
Yes, yes.
So it's made no sense. But Russo and Nash hug at the end. Nash steps out for the win and keeps the title. There was a lot to this. I mean, if you pay close attention, they tried to fill in a lot of holes here, but it was just like Russo turns. Like, Russo turns for the sake
of... It wasn't that bad.
No, it was not. This was loads better than... That Nitro we reviewed from April.
Yeah, the match concept was confusing, but I was not bored while watching this 90-minute show when you condense it without the commercial breaks. It was there's a concise story throughout the program. Say what you will about how sensical some of it was, but I thought it was fine. It worked to somewhat of a logical conclusion. I can't comment on how well it affected their business, however. What was the big culmination of this storyline?
Well, Booker and Nash would face off for the title at the Fall Brawl event, where Booker left with the title, as best I can recall. And then they did this weird deal where somehow Russo did win the title over the next month in some weird deal.
Okay. I thought it would be this one. This match,
I thought
actually.
It was, too. And I think it was another cage match because it ends with Goldberg, like, spearing Russo through a cage door.
Right.
And Russo leaves with the title. That's a Nitro when we build up some tolerance maybe we can review
mm-hmm.
when Russo wins the title. But that was it. September 4th, 2000 edition of Monday Nitro. I'm going to give this one a 4.5 out of 10, which, believe me, is high praise for a WCW 2000 event.
I give this a 5.
And as I mentioned, this show did a 3.6, very respectable number by today's standards. So
sure.
You're still talking about over 4 million viewers for an unopposed Nitro.
Yeah.
Fair enough. But, you know, not like the viewership had completely dissipated at this point.
This was still a time when there are many fans of wrestling on a Monday night needing their fix. And the show provided it, I guess.
So it was, as we mentioned in prior 2000 events with WCW, it's hard to really get into it because you know what the end result is just a few months later. Like, this was right. All the building blocks for what would ultimately really hurt the North American wrestling business
mm-hmm.
In March of that following year. And yes, there were lots of circumstances behind that, but shitty programming and driving off your fan base was certainly a big part of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's our review. We hope you enjoyed. We're going to now head on over to some feedback to those of you that watched this show or remembered it. So let's head on over, and we're going to start off with who? Wei, why don't you kick us off with feedback?
Oh, you want me to start off?
Yeah, why not?
Are you sure about that? I'll do that. Okay. Here's some feedback from Luis from Montreal, our gatekeeper of requests in the Reveal A request thread, which this particular episode came from. War Games. So,
oh, by the way, let's preface this. I wanted to mention this on the show as well. Of course, Louis,
it's French.
I don't know. Whichever, from Montreal. He does a great job, I think, compiling all of the fans' requests for reviews. So I encourage anyone that if you do have a request for a future show, post it. It's in the it's stickied on the top of the show feedback section of the message board. Mm-hmm. And if you have a request, we ask you to make a request, but only do it once.
Yeah, don't.
We're getting people that request stuff multiple times on like a weekly basis. Do not do that. In fact, if I see that, that's going to be ammunition for me not to review
that. It should be a minus point every time somebody doubles it.
Yeah. So once you put it in, like, look at Louis's list. Like, there's a ton of stuff that's been asked to request. We only have one show a week we can review. So, you know what? If you're impatient, we're sorry.
The other thing is, we don't always just choose the votes, the shows with the most votes.
No, it's a reference. And yeah, sometimes me and Wei want to review something, and sometimes we'll go to the people.
Right. So here's what Louise
from Montreal
says. I was not really watching WCW at the time, but I remember setting up the VCR to tape this episode because there was a lot of hype around it. I'm not sure how I heard about it since I mainly watched WWF and ECW at the time. TSN and WCW must have run a commercial during Raw or something. I was kind of impressed with the triple cage at the time, but even now I find that it wasn't used to its fullest potential. Needless to say, I taped over that tape. I love the video promoting the War Games 2000 match to open the show. It got me completely up to date. ICP versus Ray Jr. and Guerrero was an okay match. The skits with Lance Storm were great. I love Lance Storm. And he just basically gives a full rundown. I'll just breeze through it quickly. He says, Pamela interviews Arn Anderson. Arn tells Pam that the soaking wet look is good on her. I was so happy with the continuity. The Team Canada bits look like pre-tapes. She should have still not been wet. Hilarious. War Games 2000 for the WCW World title. The crowd started chanting, boring. Huh. Booker gets the belt and has to go back down the cage. Really dumb. Russo and Nash swerve us just to swerve us. Ending took away from an overall okay match. Good episode of Nitro. Felt like I was watching an old episode of Impact. I give the show a 6 out of 10.
All right, let's head on over to Tom. This is Tom from Boise, Idaho, which is the hometown of Tori Wilson, who appeared on this show. I just started college when this episode originally aired. I would not call this episode of Nitro bad, but I would not call it good either. I thought Jerry Borash did a really good job on the show. Why is it that TNA does not have him and Taz announced Impact on the pay-per-views? Unfortunately, you also had Mark Madden on this show as well. At least Schiavone was not too annoying. I thought there were way too many handicap matches, and the others were not really memorable unless you count a match in a triple cage. The best match on the show, in my opinion, was the Goldberg versus Shane Douglas match, or for nostalgia, the Sting versus Great Muta and Vampiro match, but that's not saying much. You do see Ray Jr. and Hoovy without masks on. It was nice to see the Great Muta, even if he was in the losing effort against Sting. It was also nice to see Pamela Paulshock for the first time in years. I did not care one way or another for Major Guns trying to become a Canadian. I did, however, like Lance Storm's flip into the pool.
Oh, did he do like a front flip?
Oh, I missed that. No, that's Lance, the consummate professional. I was not a fan of Vince Russo's promo when he used the insider terms of heel and babyface. I thought his involvement in the show brought it down for me. I think Goldberg won the RVD Jeff Hardy No Sell and Injury Award, and that the Natural Born Thrillers win the Sean Stasiak Award. We did see Goldberg beaten with a bat, but it was Goldberg.
Yeah.
I believe that Kevin Nash is the smartest man in wrestling after watching the War Games match. I would have to give the show a 3 out of 10. Due to not a whole lot of good wrestling, along with the involvement of Vince Russo and the announcing of Mark Madden.
Yeah. We go to Chris in Ottawa, who says, interesting to watch the show, having abandoned WCW around this time like a lot of other people. There was a little while there, being a teenage boy, that I tried to catch Tori Wilson's segments, but even that proved too trying. She was the apple of my eye, she was. Conan's strut to the ring to start the show made me smile. I always thought the skinny ICP guy took some half-decent bumps, although I guess he's the same guy that got awesome bombed on the bus a few weeks later, sliding off of it awkwardly to the cement floor in ICP's final WCW appearance. Good thing Pamela Paulshock was backstage checking on Team Canada. I wasn't sure about what they were doing. doing to Major Guns, but at least she would keep us posted. So Sting beat Vampiro and Muta in a minute, huh? Glad they gave ICP five times as much ring time as them. And what exactly was Chronic exactly? Dope-smoking ass-kickers? Did everyone have licensed music in WCW at this point? I'm sure that wasn't insanely expensive. Despite changing the set a couple times, I'm glad Goldberg's pyro was still intact in 2000. I always thought the pyro smoke-breathing gimmick he did was a lot more impressive than Triple H's water-spitting gimmick. So then he goes on to say, finally, glad I made it to the end. At last request, in honor of Mark Madden's 96 tears reference, during the Goldberg-Shane Douglas match, can we hear 96 tears by Question Mark and the Mysterians at the end of the podcast?
All right, we go to Justin all the way from Australia. I remember this edition of WCW Nitro vividly. When WCW began its steep decline into the pits of absurdity around 1999, I quit watching Nitro and solely watched WWE programming. I had a friend who was essentially the Australian Nate Milton. He was a glass half full sort of guy, especially when it came to WCW, despite every B-level celebrity being the promotion's world champion. This was the show that he finally persuaded me to start watching again. At the time, I absolutely loved it. It was fast-paced, had tons of star power, a triple cage, and everything my prepubescent PlayStation generation mind wanted at the time. Unfortunately, this WCW fandom Volume 2 only lasted an additional 2 weeks before Vince Russo became the WCW king, and I once again walked away, never to return. Well, there you go. 2 weeks later.
Finally, from Kid Canada, who says, living in Canada, I never really followed Nitro because while we got TBS up here so we could watch Thunder, we didn't get TNT, so you'd have to watch Nitro a few days late on TSN, and I just never bothered, so this was the first time I'd watched this show. I do remember a bit about WCW at this time, particularly that I was pleasantly surprised that Lance Storm was getting a push. I thought he was getting pretty good in Team Canada. And I thought he was pretty good in the Team Canada segments throughout the night. I suppose it's not a huge shock that Major Guns ended up showing off her Major Guns in her next career. Also, props to Arn Anderson for getting a quality one-liner on Pamela Paulshock about the soaking wet look being good on her. The wrestling on the show was generally average at best. When the best match on the show involves the Insane Clown Posse, that's a bad sign. There was just too much of guys like Ernest Miller and the Harris Brothers on the show to take it really seriously. Goldberg destroys pretty much the entire Natural Born Killers to kill any momentum they were building, before also destroying Shane Douglas. At least they put the Thrillers over to get some heat back. I remember thinking Sean O'Hare would be a superstar in WWE with his awesome vignettes, and then they found out that him cutting a live promo wasn't the same as him reading cue cards. Finally, shock of shocks, a swervetastic main event that featured an overdose of Vince Russo and Kevin Nash winning the title. John and Way, you guys often say that sometimes the logical non-swerve story is what the fans want, even if they know it's coming, and I can't agree more. Endings like this make you wonder why you bother watching it all. At least it was on free TV. I give this show 4 confused Stevie Rays out of 10.
Listen, this was one of the better Nitros, I think, in that 2000 period, which I know is not saying a whole lot, but, you know, let's give them some credit here. But it was just, it was a ship that was going down, and at this point, Way, I think it was very evident to a lot of people. I don't think that you would get this was the first time in that fall of 2000 that there were rumblings about WCW potentially being sold, but man, when the sale actually happened for like $2.5 million to the WWF, it was just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
What a...
It was insane.
Yeah. Because that was when they first started talking about the sale. It was with the belief that the television slots would still be there, making it a very valuable company. It was just, you know, they had so many losses at this point and just need new ownership. But if you could have kept those Monday, and at this point it would have been Wednesdays for Thunder, those slots... Very, very valuable slots on TNT and TBS. You've got to wonder if something could have been turned around. And I don't know. Bischoff was hoping. That was the whole hope with Fusion Media, that they would have those slots and they were going to go dark for a few months and then come back. But ultimately, would it have been that much different? It's hard to say because you're talking about a lot of the same players that were involved in the downfall that were going to hopefully be part of the recovery as well.
But I imagine even just for the price alone for that library, that tape library.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a lot of value right there.
It was
a bargain.
WWE made that money back just easily. I mean, yeah. That Invasion pay-per-view, as watered down as some people thought it was, still is
I think, the most purchased non-WrestleMania event they've ever done. It did almost 800,000 buys. That's incredible for that Invasion pay-per-view. It makes you think what it could have done as well. Like, that's how much people were into that at the time. And obviously, $2.5 million. That's pennies for that company.
Yep.
That is going to conclude us, everyone, for this edition of Review Away. A more respectable time, Way. Look at that as we look at
1:30 something.
That's
not bad.
Not bad at all.
Yeah.
And now we set our sights on next week, Way, where we are not going to chat about David Flair and Stacy Keibler's wedding. We are going to go. I like to compare and contrast, Way. So I thought we would take a look at the WWF at this point in time, and go take a look at an event that I will refer to our votes. And I know we are now technically into October, but we can squeeze in a September event here.
Sure.
So let's go with the Unforgiven pay-per-view from 2000 in WWF land. This would have been just a few weeks after this Nitro. And this also featured Steve Austin returning after his neck surgery. Not for a match, just an appearance. Mm-hmm. So,
what else was on the show?
And there was a four-way for the WWF title with The Rock defending, and Triple H and Kurt Angle having their first singles match, which had been built up for quite a few months. So this was really, obviously, during the company's big period, and I think we'll get a contrast to this Nitro. So
cool.
I thought we'd take a look at that next week, if that's cool with you, Way.
Yeah, it's fine.
All right. So we are going to, you have a song in mind?
Yeah, let's go with our listeners' request here. This comes from Hacksaw Jim
Chris. Hacksaw Jim Chris?
Hacksaw Jim Chris from Ottawa, who wants to request, as referenced by Mark Madden during the Goldberg-Shane Douglas match, 96 Tears by Question Mark and the Mysterians.
Fantastic. All right, well, that's going to wrap us up, everyone. You can go to liveaudiowrestling.com, subscribe to Live Audio Wrestling on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter, at Law Radio, at Way0937. We've got The Law up from this past Sunday, Review a Raw from Monday night, and talking about that odd show from Monday night.
Oh, that was a crazy, crazy show.
Very,
lots to talk about.
Very strange show from Monday night.
It wasn't that strange. It was pretty pedestrian.
Well,
actually,
we have different definitions of strange.
Right. Okay.
And 20 minutes or so with Christopher Daniels, also up on the site, chatting Bound for Glory, Claire Lynch, and Comics Way.
Yeah, I look forward
to
that.
This is your dream interview to catch. So that's up there on iTunes, Stitcher, the website, all that fun stuff. So go check it out, and we'll be back later this week with Review and Impact. And lots more. So thanks for listening as we go out here with the Mysterions?
Question mark in the Mysterions.
Glad I asked.
Too many teardrops for one heart to be crying. Too many teardrops for one heart to carry on. You're way on top now. Since you left me, you're always laughing way down at me. But watch out now, I'm gonna get there. We'll be together for just a little while, and then I'm gonna put you way down. You'll start crying. 96 tears. Cry. Cry. And when the sun comes up, I'll be on top. You'll be right down there, looking up. And I might wave, come up here. But I don't see you waving now. I'm way down here, wondering how I'm gonna get to you. But I know now, I'll just cry. To carry on.